Blog Talk Radio.
Rename cheese! Rename your nuts!
Welcome to the Gridiron Blitz Podcast, your weekly source for women's American football, insights, game recaps, and NFL news weekly. Subscribe on Apple and iHeart.
Is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
Welcome to Gridiron Blitz, guys. Episode 428, Oscar Lopez in the house. We'll be followed in about an hour with the Oracle of Women's Tackle Football. That's Mark Simone, a.k.a. the Backseat Coach, breaking it down, everything in Finland, Sweden, WAWCFL in Canada. We're also looking forward to the Russian season, June 12th here. Looking forward to the German season to kick off also this coming weekend. Plus, WNFC, WFA playoffs all this weekend. And the place to be is at the Hub, facebook.com/gridironbeauties. That is the place to be. Everything that's happening in the sport from the best network on the planet is at the Hub. So don't miss it. Go there. Like us. Share it. Comment. Thank you for everybody that's gone there. Almost 9,000 followers out there. Really appreciate everybody going to the Hub, staying up to date on everything that's happening in the sport. And big news in the WNFC just came out this week. It came out during the middle of the week. It was announced during the All-Star roster selections of the WNFC on Vire Sports, and that was from Odessa Jenkins. Dick's Sporting Goods is now the official nationwide retailer of the National Women's Football Conference, the WNFC, and they are in for a great ride for 2023. Dick's Sporting Goods nationwide, get everything at Dick's Sporting Goods, pretty much everything in terms of what a football player would need, and seasons on top of that. And also, that also kind of coincides with Sam Gordon and the Under Armour initiative for the women's only cleats that happened a while back when we talked to Sam Gordon a couple podcasts ago. So she's excited to do the clinics as well with UA, excited to be partnering with Dick's Sporting Goods. It looks like Dick's Sporting Goods is now the national retailer of women's and girls sports, because from what I'm reading and what I'm getting from some of the news sources, Dick's Sporting Goods is also partnered with the WNBA. So the WNBA is probably their biggest flagship league that they are promoting also nationwide in terms of North America. And now they get on the football women's side, football, women's football, the WNFC. They're also going to be, notice was coming out. They are working to make an arrangement with the NWSFL, which is the soccer version of women's sports. So the big three labels in terms of image is now at one retailer. So that is huge for them to bring in girls and women to their platform, to their online sourcing, to their stores, and where they can get everything there in terms of female attire, female fitness gear, feet in the shoes, apparel, you name it, that is the destination. So Dick's Sporting Goods obviously understands the importance of spotlighting women and girls in sports. And so a lot of the major leagues, women's sports major leagues, I would say, a lot of the major women's sports major leagues now have made an emphasis to kind of partner with Dick's Sporting Goods with its volume, with its basically online sourcing, everything else that's happening. It's kind of like what baseball, the NBA, and MLS have done with hooking up with major retailers as well nationwide. And let's say, for example, Fanatics. Fanatics is a major source for the NFL, the NBA, MLS. And so, you know what? This gives the WNFC a different level of branding. It also gives the WNFC a different level of reach ability, because now you have the WNBA in select markets where girls and women can now understand that there's a team in town that obviously generates more ticket sales, going to generate more marketing. It's going to just generate a lot more awareness. So, you know, shout out to the WNFC leadership team. Shout out to Dick's Sporting Goods and their CEO for believing in women's sports. But that was the big news this week. So if you're at the Hub, it was breaking prior to this podcast coming on here. You can go to the Hub, get the latest updates, everything that's happening in the sport from the best network on the planet. And when I say that with confidence. We are the best network on the planet because we have passionate people that want to bring awareness to women's American football globally. And we network with over 60 people to bring you the best source on the planet that exclusively covers women's American football. So doing it for almost, I want to say almost 20 years, 15, 20 years. So it's a lot of laboring, but we are making ends roads over 9,000 strong in terms of likes and follows, over 20K in reachability. So thank you for everybody that is bringing everybody to the attention of women's American football specifically and women's sports in general. That's what we try to cover on the platform as a whole. It's Pride Month. So as you guys know, there's a lot of the whole month that's going to be celebrated with the passion, and what more passion that in Pride Month than celebrating two playoff marquee major leagues this weekend coming up, WNFC playoffs, East and West. It's in Jacksonville, San Diego, and then we have the WFA playoffs in each of their individual team markets. We'd be Boston, Minnesota, and Arlington. So it's going to be a great playoff action in terms of the United States. We also have Sweden, Finland. We also have the WCFL up north. We still have FX Mexico 8-on-8 championship down south. We got everything that's covering up there, including X-League coming up here on June 10th. That's going to be Kansas City versus Chicago as well. You also get coverage right there at the Hub, WFL, LOFAX, plus LFM as well. So everything in the sport right there, that's where it's at. So it's really awesome. So don't forget to subscribe onto our podcast. We're over a lot in terms of Apple, so I really appreciate you guys listening to us on Apple Podcasts exclusively. Listen to us on iHeart and as well and on Spotify. So it's awesome that we're growing there. But Apple is our major platform, and that's one of the ones that we got to penetrate. We are doing great overseas in Europe, so it's really awesome to hear. And thank you for everybody subscribing, sharing our podcast as well, and listening to myself, Mark, and all our co-hosts, Mackenzie Brooks, Terry Lister, as well as Nate Ward, and then the Hall of Famer, Holly Custis. So pretty awesome to do. All right, we're going to dive into the sport in terms of the news that came up this week, but also a lot of the stuff that's happening in this weekend. But let me get my notes here because where did I leave my notes? Here we are.
It's the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests.
Not what I wanted, but that's okay. Promo, $5 free play on Monkey Knife Fight. So if you guys go to Monkey Knife Fight, use the code NJF and you get started today. All right, no problem. Let's dive into this. We talked about CAO already. Let's dive into Christy Elliott. I wanted to mention that Christy Elliott also made the Football Canada roster, a really young athlete out of college. She's now going to be participating. She's going to be participating now in the Football Canada roster. So congratulations to her. Also, Jen Welter is going to be at the Pacific Conference for the WNFC this weekend. So it's going to be awesome. All right, we're going to be going into the Monkey Knife Fight huddle right now, and we're going to be talking to the legendary and talented all-world wide receiver, and that is Adrian Smith of the Boston Renegades. And then in 45 minutes, we're going to dive into Amanda Housen and her experience in the U.S. playing for the Mississippi Lady Panthers of the WNFC. So let's go into the huddle right now, Monkey Knife Fight Huddle. Don't forget, use the code NJF to get started.
It's the fastest-growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy-to-play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
Let's go into the huddle with the talented Adrian Smith, all-world wide receiver. Adrian, how's it going tonight?
Everything's going well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. We're going good. Just waiting for the playoffs here. WFA, WNFC, just big weekend.
I know. It's a huge weekend for women's football. I'm super excited, very, very focused and ready to take the field with my Boston Renegade sisters.
Adrian, no surprise that you guys are here. We talked about it from day one, even preseason. No surprise that you guys are here at this point. You know, not that it's hard laboring, but are you shocked that you got to face the Divas in the playoffs? I don't think anybody's surprised that you got to face the Divas in the playoffs.
No, it's not a shock. You know, the Divas are a solid squad, so we anticipated that we'd be, depending on how things, you know, were able to shake out, it would be the Divas or, you know, the Tampa as being our opponents in our first round of playoffs.
Adrian, we were watching the game against D.C., and we were informed on the air while we were watching the game that you were approaching a milestone. And then we realized, wow, when I talked to Mark, off, you know, just chatting back and forth in our chat room, that you were approaching over 5,000 yards, which is like a huge milestone. Not that you're old or anything like that, but you know what I mean? It's like 5,000 yards is, you know, that's a lot.
Yes. So, I'm blessed to have been able to play for, you know, over a decade. And the game against DC was very interesting because apparently everyone else knew how close I was to breaking the all-time receiving yards record for the WFA. Everyone knew except for me. And so, you know, I talked to the owner of the Renegades, Molly Goodwin, after the game, and she was grinning like a Cheshire cat in that she was like, you know, I was keeping it secret. Everything was just under wraps. And so I had no idea. You know, I'm just out here saying, what can I do to help my team win? How can I get the next yard? How can I get the next touchdown? And for this to have occurred, to break the record, it truly is a humbling experience. And I've got to give thanks to the coaching staff, right, to the organization and to Allison Cahill, my QB, and to all of the women who've played O-line and the other receivers who's blocked for me. So it really is a team stat. It might be my name on it, but you can't get yards without people blocking for you and without having an amazing quarterback who can get you the ball.
Longevity is a big key. I know you talk about it a lot, and staying healthy obviously is a key, right? Because a lot of times injuries hinder your production. But you've been able and been fortunate, like you said, enough to be playing with some talented individuals alongside yourself, and then obviously some of the amazing coaches along the way as well with the different incarnations, the two incarnations of the Renegades. But you know what? When you look at it in the scope of the WFA, you know, when you look at men's sports, Adrian, everybody looks in the scope of the NFL, right? You go back to the 30s all the way down to now. But unfortunately, we don't have that. We basically have a short window now. And if you look at it in that scope, right, this is the 30s for women's football, basically. The 30s and 40s, if you compare it to the NFL. And that's a huge thing because, you know, if and when you put them up and do not play any longer, you know, we're going to reflect on this era of where, you know, awareness was building, where branding was growing, where the acceptance of women's football is a major sport. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like you're part of that infancy where we're going to go back and kind of reflect on your success in terms of the building blocks for the sport to be brought to a higher level.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's an astute point. And, you know, I feel a sense of responsibility. It's my job to train, to work hard, to, you know, to study the plays. It's my job to do everything that I can to assist the Renegades in winning championships. But I also feel that it's my job to do everything that I can to propagate the sport, to move women's tackle football forward faster and faster and faster. And so you're right. You know, women's tackle right now is where men's tackle was in maybe early to mid-1900s. And this, we are in kind of not just the nascent stages of the sport, but where we're starting to pick up momentum. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. So as you were saying before, with Dick's Sporting Goods coming on to support the WNFC, with all of these national sponsors finally turning their eyes towards women's football and giving us the support we need to grow our platform even more, it's a fantastic time to be playing football, and I'm excited about it. And I tell my teammates, you know, we're blessed to be playing at this moment in time, but we're also building a foundation for those 5-year-old girls, those 8-year-old girls, those 17-year-old teens who are about to take that next step and start playing flag football at the collegiate level. I mean, it's all part of the process, and I just feel really blessed and humbled to be playing my role in this evolution.
Let's go into that segue then, because I know you're a big supporter of the NNIA. The Sauer sisters are huge right now in terms of building that program in terms of the West Coast. You got other players that are playing still in certain leagues, but they're basically kind of stepping away. But they're branching into the colleges in terms of coaches. You got Fuller down south in Georgia. Grayson in the Midwest.
Yep.
So there's a lot of prominent, you know, players that have played this sport for a long time, you know, 12 to 15 years, but now they're stepping away into, I think, and more so when I've talked to Grayson and Fuller, this is more of a fulfilling mission than their own playing time, because your point, they're basically breaking a barrier and also creating a path, because they've experienced the sport at a higher level. They've all played in championship level football, and to see, Braves Athletics at the stadium, the Benn Stadium in Atlanta, and for the Atlanta Falcons to kind of kick started. And I know Kay has been a big part of it too in Georgia, you know, building that program, getting an acceptance of having everybody kind of buy into it in terms of what I mean, flag football, in terms of the girls scene out there. But you were there, you know, with Jen Welter for the NNIA championships. And I mean, to have it spotlighted now as a kind of, like, I want to say traditional, it's getting traditional, especially for NFL flag, because NFL flag before to me was kind of just like one of these things that the NFL does just to give you a couple minutes of your life, right? But now I think with Russell Wilson coming into the picture, owning that division, I think the focus has shifted to getting the girls and their attention that they need as well as the boys. And I really, I think that's a huge achievement now. But I mean, can you speak to the NNIA in terms of what the Sauer sisters are doing at that level?
Right. So I was at the NAIA Women's Flag Football Championship in Atlanta a few weeks ago. So it was like May, I think 12th, 13th, 14th, something like that. I'm in partnership with NFL Flag as a Females in Flag ambassador. That's why Welter was there as well. And so it was really, I mean, it was a heartwarming experience, just something that I will never forget, because to me, it was akin to, the nascent stages of women's basketball, NCAA basketball, where it had just started. And the fact that this year is the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and now we've got collegiate level flag football for women. It was huge. And the talent that I saw out there, I was just so excited. I mean, I had my cleats on. I just wanted to run out and start running routes and catching passes for some of the amazing quarterbacks that were out there. It took all my energy and strength just to be on the sidelines and clap and cheer. I wanted to play so much. But it's definitely a shift. And to see what Liz and Katie did with their team, shout out to the Ottawa Braves, and shout out to my friend Clara, who played for them, to go back-to-back is a tremendous feat. And again, I think it's very important for us to consistently set standards of excellence and to be examples of how well and how skilled we are and how passionate we are for football. And the fact that the NAIA has established this, it legitimizes everything that, as you mentioned, a lot of the women's tackle football players who are making the shift over into flag, it legitimizes our passion and how we are taking an active part, an active role in establishing this pipeline So, I mean, the tide is rising. The level of play will continue to rise. I'm just so excited about what's going to happen, not in the next 20 years, in the next 2 years, in the next 5 years. I think there's just going to be this amazing shift, and it's going to be a blast to watch.
Now, I've talked to a couple people already. They're excited when the SEC jumps in full bore with full broadcasting. I think they're excited, you know, to see just one conference in the NCAA, you know, just jump on board, and that will blow up. You know what I mean? Just the fact that you get one conference, like that major conference is an example, the SEC. You get the SEC to blow, mm-hmm. to get into flag football and blow it up in every school in the SEC, you're gonna see a huge volcano type effect. You know what I mean? The fact that it's going to be just major.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And, you know, the JUCOs have jumped on board too. So you've got the junior colleges, mm-hmm. coming in. It's just a matter of time. That's all. And it's not a long time. You know, we're not talking about another 100 years to sit here and wait for equality. And that's why I'm excited, because it's increasing so rapidly that I can't put any dates or times on it. But I think before we know it, we're going to see the NCAA come through.
Hey, Adrian, the fact that you got yourself, Welter, you got Jackson, you know, just a bunch of a small group of you guys that are just putting yourselves out there in terms of faith and notoriety. But the fact that you guys are so skill related, you know, fundamentally focused in that, mm-hmm. sense, I think really speaks volumes to all of you as a unit, you know, Phoebe as well overseas, mm-hmm. the fact that you guys want to put this on the map, you know what I mean? That it needs to come to that level where you guys have, you know, your resume, in other words, speaks for itself, reputation, you know, in terms of championship caliber. And when you start, you know, mm-hmm. diving into each person, Fuller, Grayson, you know what I mean? Everybody comes from a background where it's an achievable thing, or it's a situation where all of you have had championship success, in other words.
Yes, and I think it's very interesting you bring that up, because I believe that it's that type of championship mindset that is propelling us to take these roles and to really, you know, not just enjoy the successes that we have had and go off into the sunset or just head to the beach and, oh, that's it, but we still feel an obligation. And in that, and using that verb, there are no negative nuances attached to that, like an obligation, a duty, a pride, a sense of pride in having effect, like having a role in growing the sport. And again, not taking decades for it to happen, but let's move swiftly. So you have your Welchers, you have your Angelicas, you have your Phoebes of the world, and we're concerted. We know the scope and the breadth of what we've achieved as players, and we want to magnify that for other women and for girls coming behind us.
And it really speaks volumes to the impact that you guys have made so far in a short period of time, as you were mentioning before. I mean, you guys have been on this program for what, 36 months. I think last time I talked to Steph Jackson, it was probably a three-year milestone in terms of the NFL flag scope of things. But you've spoken to us in the previous podcast about professional flag, you know, bringing to another level. Once it gets to the level of pro in terms of the flag scene, you said that would be a game changer, and it's starting to evolve there.
Absolutely. We've got the Birmingham games coming up this summer, which will be pretty much just a precursor, right? It's a little appetizer, whetting people's mm-hmm. Appetite for having flag football become an official Olympic sport for 2028. I'm sure we're all aware that, you know, Nike has put their resources behind it. The NFL is putting its resources behind that goal. And it's like anything else in this world. Once you sprinkle a little money on it, that changes everything. Just imagine that now, you know, a five-year-old girl can be growing up in a time where she's really good at flag football, she could actually make a living playing flag football. I mean, it's similar to what we've been able to see in modern history in the last few decades. It's similar to what happened with the WNBA and how, you know, basketball just used to be, oh, well, they would only allow women to play half court, right? Oh, the female body's too delicate. Women cannot run the full court. And now women are dunking. Now women are doing, you know, they're shooting from half court. It's just the level of play has increased dramatically. And it's gone from, well, women cannot do, to, you know what, we have a bona fide pipeline from elementary school to middle to high school to college and now to the WNBA and then also to other countries around the world where women can play basketball at the professional level. So I think that model has been set. It took a while. It took longer than most people will have wanted, but the thing is, none of us were around in like 1934 when the NFL, when men's tackle was just getting started. None of us were around in like 1960, 63, whatever it was when the AFL and the NFL merged, right? So we're just here today assuming that all of these sports leagues that have been around, some of them for 100 years, 75 years, assuming that the women's side should have that same level of success in 2 years, right? How come there's this disparity? Well, it's like, okay, well, let's go back to 1932, you know, let's go back to 1961, where these male athletes were working their regular jobs and playing football on the side. So I think there has to be a little balance, and we just need to remind ourselves that a good, if you want to build something great, you have to spend time on that foundation. It will take a while. Like, it's the difference, my mom would always say, it's the difference between, you know, a home-cooked Thanksgiving dinner, which is taking hours upon hours, or you want to pop something into the microwave for 5 minutes, but, yeah, it's a microwave turkey.
Yeah, and we also have to kind of consider the difference between the two, right? To your point, the men's game didn't explode until they got broadcasting, which was the late 70s. The early 75,
correct.
76, without broadcasting. So the moment I think that our sport starts to generate broadcasting will be at that initial WNBA level, right? The first 3 years of the WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think we're in a different era, which is more flexibility for us than it was in the past. Because you go back in the day between us 10 years ago, you know, before we had social media, you're doing things to try to get, you know, something on print, right? Something in terms of a magazine, in terms of a newspaper. It's no longer that way anymore. So it's a little bit easier in that way to get your word out, but you also have to be strategic about it. So I think in general, the sport is growing, you know, with certain platforms. You got Roku for the WFA, you got ESPN2. So there's interest now in terms of just women's sports in general and content for women's sports than there wasn't before. And I think, you know, the flag bearer would be the WNBA in terms of the United States. And then you got to put yourself into, you know, the NWSFL, which is kind of big in certain East Coast markets. And so now, you know, I've talked to you, you know, Odessa, I know Odessa, talked to Odessa numerous times. And, you know, her aspect is the same as yours. It's just a penetrating mode, right? So we're football.
Yeah.
They got soccer, they got basketball. Now we're football, right, in terms of the women's sports. So you have to penetrate as a sports unit for them to see value. Once they see value, they saw value in basketball, they saw value in soccer, now they'll eventually see some value in football. And I think that's literally the message now.
I agree. And I think you hit it spot on with how broadcasting is so powerful, because people don't know what they don't know. Like, no one can truly say, oh, I don't like women's tackle football. You haven't seen it. So how do you know? That's like saying, well, I don't like a certain flavor of ice cream when you've never tasted it before. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about the WFA championship being broadcast live on ESPN2 on July 10th. I think that will be a game changer. For the first time, we will have national exposure on a linear network. So those who know about women's football, yes, they will be tuning in. But more importantly, those people who are just scrolling through on that Sunday, just scrolling through you know, their guys on their TV and they come across us, that's what I'm really excited about. We'll be able to get exposure. We'll be able to engage with the person or the people who didn't really know that we existed. And that's what's very powerful. And you're right, we are seeing it this year especially. I mean, I'm watching the Women's World Series, and I think the latest data that came out was like these past couple of games are the most watched games in like
go UCLA,
a decade.
Adrian.
And then
UCLA. Well, I got to tell you right now. Go UCLA.
Say again.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Oh, go UCLA.
UCLA.
Right? Yeah, UCLA. But like they have over 12,000 fans at this stadium that was specifically designed
in Oklahoma, Adrian. In Oklahoma, the little state in the Midwest of Oklahoma, packed. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's impressive.
Packed because and the stadium was literally designed for this purpose. It was designed for softball, and it's the old adage: if you build it, they will come. So, I mean, what, less than, not even 5 years ago, I'm sure there were a bunch of people out there saying, oh, there's no way you could even get, like, 7,000 people to show up at a college a softball series. And now there's over, you know, 10,000 doing that. So it's the same thing. And you're right in terms of the age in which we're living, social media is an exponential magnifier. It will help the women's game grow faster than, say, the men's game could back in the 60s and 70s, because just information took longer to travel. So we're in a perfect time. I really feel like this is a sweet spot. We're in an inflection point for women's tackle football. I'm raring to go. You got me pumped up right now. Like, I need to be winding down, but I'm like, I can hit the field right now and play a whole game. I'm ready. Maybe I'll do some push-ups. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, no. You do what you do. I'm not going to stop you. I know other people in other podcasts stop you what you want to do. You want to take a break and do push-ups right now, you're good. It's not a problem.
No, I'm tossing a football around right now. That'll get this extra energy out.
Adrian, so SI did a feature on you as well, and they've done a nice feature on it. Can you speak to that feature that was done on you, that we have it at the Hub so everybody can dive into it? You just click on it. Get to see Adrian's piece right there on SI.com.
Yes, that was I'm just so appreciative to have been selected. So Sports Illustrated, in conjunction with a platform called Empower Onyx, they did a series where they're focusing on, you know, 100 influential Black women in sports, and I was honored to have been selected. And it was a prime opportunity for me to do what we're doing right now, honestly, to talk about women's football, to talk about the strides we're making, the hopes for the future, and again, getting the word out there, getting information, spreading the word about who we are, what we're doing, and where we're going. And I don't know if Sports Illustrated is such a huge platform, so the response has been tremendous, and I really want to help. I really want to use the momentum that I'm receiving to push the game even more.
All right, Adrian, a lot of feedback. We appreciate you. Badass photo shoot for Team Milk. So, shout out to you and your photographer and everybody out there. So we want to just thank you for an awesome photo shoot. You look badass on almost every photo shoot. That's pretty cool. So whoever took
that photo shoot,
man, they did a pretty good job in terms of, getting you out there spotlighted. And if everybody missed it at the Super Bowl weekend, front and center, Team Milk, and she was all over billboards in LA. So.
Yeah, I really want to give a shout out to Milk Pep. That's the official name of the company, the organization that is behind Team Milk. And for them, again, you know, seeing the change that was on the horizon and saying we want to do something different. So leading up to the Super Bowl, saying, hey, you know, women's football is a thing. Like, we should highlight that. We should bring to the forefront that there are other giants among us, right? It's not just going to be the men playing in the game in the stadium in L.A., but we've got some ballers on the flag football field. We've got ballers playing tackle football. And, you know, shout out to Luis Pena, who's the director, the photographer, and just his entire team. They treated us like royalty. The whole process was absolutely amazing. And all of us, you know, Joe Overstreet, Jonah, Lois, we all just, again, were humbled and so excited to represent what we felt like was just the whole army of women and girls out there who love this sport. And so for the first time in like a concerted effort, a concerted campaign, bringing our sport to the forefront and at such a an inspirational time during Super Bowl week. It was absolutely phenomenal.
All right, Adrian, a couple years from now, Grandma was on the billboards at the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? You're going to tell that story, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What did Grandma do? Oh, no, nothing. She just, you know, she was at the billboards in Los Angeles at the Super Bowl.
That's no big deal. No big deal. Right.
I mean, it was.
That's funny.
It was a huge thing, right? It was a huge thing to see, like you said, to finally get what better place to do it than at the biggest men's stage, right? That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's a huge deal. Radio Row in front of Los Angeles, one of the biggest, you mm-hmm. know, metros in the world, and at one of the elite stadiums on the planet. There was just a lot of, like, yes, 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 right? Everyone was like, yes, this is happening. And we were blown away when that came out. You know, I was blown away when you guys were actually introduced to the Team Milk and Lois Cook and yourself and the cohorts. But I was even more blown away when they said, hey, we're putting them on billboards. And that's like another level.
Yes. I mean, Milk, they really planted their flag in the sand. And it was really about, hey, they said, we're taking a stance here. We're taking a stance here. We're going to give women and girls in football a major platform. And you're right. I mean, it was Super Bowl week in Los Angeles. The billboards were placed strategically around the stadium, the neighborhood that the stadium was in. And it's a dream come true. Like, not even a dream come true. I didn't even dream about something like this. And again, it was an honor to be leading that charge. And to, again, I always say to my teammates, to set that standard of excellence. So Jonah, Joe, Lois, and I mean, we came to the photo shoot. We were prepared. We were professional. We were creative, flexible in terms of what they needed us to do, because we knew how important this moment was, right? We knew that the results of this campaign, of the Team Milk campaign, the results of working with the four of us, it was going to inform the rest of the industry. So there was that added weight, that added pressure, but the four of us were definitely willing to take it on because we have all invested so much of our lives into the sport, and we want to see it continue and grow for others.
All right, Adrian, let's end it here. I know you got to go and you're busy, but I really appreciate you making the time for me, as always. NFT.
Absolutely.
Nobody knows about NFT except for what Tom Brady and what he's putting out there about his own NFT. But NFT space and Web3, you hooked up with I believe some partners with from what I was listening to a couple of podcasts that you were on. So we're not trolling you or anything, but we do pay attention to you. There was obviously some space there, and you had talked about on a previous podcast how, you know, it took you a while to kind of figure out what this industry was going to be about. So can you speak to a little bit about the NFT and the Web3 type initiatives?
Right, absolutely. So I encourage everyone, go to gridironqueendom.com and click on our NFT webpage. It will provide way more information than I'll be able to give in this limited time that we have. But as an entrepreneur, I'm always trying to stay on top of what is new, what is now, you know, what is next. And NFTs, non-fungible tokens, are kind of a new asset class. So it's basically you have a digital asset. And it can be a photograph, it can be a short video clip. But what I wanted to do was create the first NFT collection dedicated to women in football. And so the first collection, the first GIQ collection, NFT collection that we did is based on the passing touchdown card from my Blitz Champs card game. So again, if you go to gridironqueendom.com and click on our NFT tab, you'll find information about that. And the next NFT collection I'm looking to do is something that's going to have more of a real world aspect to it. It's pretty cool. I can't get into too many details. I'm in talks with a possible sponsor right now, a company that I want to partner with, but it'll be something forthcoming. And, you know, I'm dedicating 10% of the proceeds from all of the NFTs that we sell to supporting organizations like Jen Welser's Gridiron Girls, to the Boston Renegades Foundation, to the Utah Girls Tackle Football League. I really want to be able to make cash infusions into these organizations that are doing the right work, that are providing opportunities for girls and women to learn the sport, to play the sport, and to improve their skill set in football.
Now, we talked about NFT, and a lot of people don't know about it, but I think if we break it down by just a basic level, it is basically back in the day, which some of us are old, back in the day, it would be like a Panini trading card type of design, right? Like baseball card type deal with the, mm-hmm. which is genuine. There's a poster, but nowadays it would probably be a video in that aspect, right? So it's basically a real asset that you can own. It's a one-of-a-kind type of asset.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is limited, right, Adrian, where it's like it's only going to be run for that amount of time and it's never going to be issued again, as an example. So it's very unique in a way, but also, to your point, it's a one-of-a-kind type of item. So it is GIQueendom.com, and then you look at the tab at NFT tab, right?
Right. So Gridiron Queendom spelled out, and then click on NFT. Or you can just type in gridironqueendom.com/NFT. But yeah, that's a great analogy. So it is similar to trading cards back in the day, but now it's digital assets. It's just digitized.
And I think it's more efficient that way because, you know, back in the day, you know, and I know, we had to go to seven different retailers, and then and you're fighting everybody at the counter, and then you're trying to look for the number system, and, right?
And the great thing about NFTs, right? And the great thing about NFTs is that the chain of ownership is maintained on the blockchain, which is like a network of computers worldwide. So that you can see, okay, you know, this is a legitimate NFT. It was created by this project. You know, I'm purchasing it, and then if I sell my digital asset to someone else, then the blockchain has recorded that yes, what I possess is authentic, and now I'm selling it to someone else.
Yeah, back in the day, we had to go to what did they call it? The local retailer guy, the card retailer guy, and he would be the one that. Visualize that, right? If it's secured in a nice little casing or a plexiglass casing,
right.
It's actually legit and it's not damaged or worn, right? In that sense, that was back in the day. So
that's
now
it.
You avoid all that. So all you have to do is, like you said, validate it. And when it transfers, it revalidates itself once you do the actual transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So really interesting that you're working on that. Hopefully we'll get, you know, the Team Milk on an NFT type mentality, that would be cool to have, the first couple players like yourselves, impactful for the sport in that sense, come out on a NFT type of line. So a lot of things that you're doing, people don't realize about, you know, what you do on the side besides football and what you do in terms of your other endeavors and businesses. So all around athletes, world champion, multi-time world champion, and of course, you know, always on the go. And like you said, Blitz Champs, one of the best games you can have out there for educational purposes, as well for schools and everything else. And now you're doing NFT with Web3. So I don't know what you cannot do Adrian, is the question that most people would say. What can you not do?
You know what? I cannot color in between the lines. Like, I almost failed kindergarten.
Really?
I can't.
That's
your
problem?
Yeah, I just.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my problem.
kindergarten class would not be good for you then.
No, I always joke. I tell people it was a good thing I was cute with a great personality, because that's what got me through kindergarten.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not good at the arts and crafts.
Well, we have a secret, and that's your secret. So everybody knows it now.
That's yes.
We know the.
Don't tell anybody though.
Don't want to tell everybody. So Adrian, always entertaining to have you come on. Wish you continued success as always. Stay healthy. Safe travels. And you know what? Just keep doing what you're doing. Kick ass. We have a lot of fans on our page that admire you and that follow you as well, and they're looking out for what's new with you. And so we always appreciate you coming on and giving us a little a couple minutes of your time, and let our fans know exactly what you're all about. And this weekend, all about balling at Boston, D.C. That's what we're at right now, and I know you're focused this weekend, so this is one of the biggest rivalries, if not the biggest rivalry in the WFA. And I know DC is up for this. And the Renegades, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but us, media, and everybody else, we figured you'd be here. And also Mark, who's always here all the time, he knows that you guys are going to be here.
Right. Well, we work hard at that. Like, we don't take that for granted. And I hear what you're saying about, you know, figuring we'd be here, but it is on our end. Our foot is on the gas pedal. Like, we are serious about football. We are serious about studying film. We're almost OCD, if not like anal, in terms of making sure routes are accurate, blocking's accurate, defensive schemes are accurate. It's a group of perfectionists that we're working with, because for us, again, we want to elevate the game. We want to show how well women play football. So no excuses. If you make a mistake, you better make up for it somehow.
And Adrian, the fans got to see the international backfield, and they'll get to see it live this weekend. So I hope DC's ready, because I mean, that international backfield is scary. Not just yourself and that line, but them backs are scary.
Indeed. Shout out to Tutti, aka Freight Train from Finland, who is just really just ready to just run through brick walls, trees, trucks, it doesn't matter. And then roof size doesn't matter, Mata from England. They're absolutely phenomenal, tremendous additions to the team. And like I said, again, it's that Boston Renegades mentality. As soon as they landed in the country, they already were on top of our plays and just were immediately able to jump in from the first minute of practice. I'd never seen anything like it. They just came in raring to go. You would have thought that they had been with us since January. But it's that level of commitment that enables us to execute in the way that we do. I'm so happy to have them. And then also JJ Sales from Finland as well. Coming in at she's playing the Y and the Z, so she's got a couple of roles there. So it's been tremendous to have our international players help us out.
And Adrian, I don't know about you, but we follow it globally, and you picking up them two, I'm sorry, but them two are like superstars in their own country. So, and they're going to the Renegades. How's that happen?
We know. Well, you know, like attracts like, and I get it.
That's true.
They're the best in their countries, and they're like, okay, if I'm good here, I want to see if I'm good over there. I want to see how well I stack up next to the best, and that's why they went to Boston.
All right, guys, you guys are going to get to see it. I believe Revere TV will be covering it. So Adrian Smith,
yes.
Boston Renegades. You're going to see Cahill on top of that, and also Kusinen and Mata live front and center. So don't miss it this Saturday. WFA front and center. The playoffs begin. The road to Canton starts this Saturday. Thank you, Adrian, for coming in. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to another chat. And we are looking forward to seeing you in Canton, of all places. And I think everybody's rooting you guys on again.
Appreciate that so much. As I've said before, and I will continue to say, thank you. Thank you so much for what you do to elevate the game, for the platform that you've created for us to be able to talk about, you know, everything that's going on, where we want to go. You are an integral part in our success. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Adrian, for that. I appreciate it. And looking forward to this weekend. Safe travels. And we'll see you, I believe, in Canton. That's our hope. And this weekend starts with D.C., so looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. Talk soon.
All right, guys. Adrian Smith, all-world wide receiver, Team USA multi-time champion, WFA multi-time champion, Team Milk ambassador, NFT entrepreneur, GI Queendom owner and founder. I guess I can go on, and WFA all-time receiving champion in the WFA. Wow, what a resume. So check it out, SI article right there at the hub at facebook.com/gridironbeauties. All right, guys, we're going to go into the second Monkey Knife Fight huddle, and if you guys haven't gone to Monkey Knife Fight, go to Monkey Knife Fight, U.S. only. Check it out, NBA playoffs tomorrow. You got MMA, PGA. It's a prop-based platform, easy, $5 free play on us. Use the code NJF, get started. If you get the prop right, let's say, you know, how many 3 points can Steph Curry make in a prop, and if you guess it right, you're going to make $15 on our free $5 free play. So go to Monkey Knife Fight, use the code NJF to get started. We're going to go into the second Monkey Knife Huddle, and today we're going to be talking to international superstar and Queensland pioneer and quarterback of the Mississippi Lady Panthers, and that would be Amanda Housen here in a second here.
Is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
Don't forget, guys, NBA finals start tomorrow. You go to the Monkey Knife Fight, use the code NJF, get your $5 free play, and get some winnings. All right, let's bring in the QB of the Lady Panthers of the WNFC. That is Amanda Housen in the house. Amanda, thanks for making the time. Appreciate you coming on.
No, thanks, Oscar. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Amanda. Everybody wants to know, how was this USA experience in Mississippi?
It was pretty awesome, actually. I mean, it's something that I know I personally wanted to do, is come over to the U.S. and play football over here for some time. So it's like everything. It's just all your cards need to align, obviously, at the right time to be able to do it. And after COVID seasons and everything, it's so great that the world has opened up again to be able to provide us with the opportunity to come over and play with the WNSC and certainly within the U.S. Almost no words can explain how fun it has been to play football again after having a year off. And above that, being here in the U.S. competing against the best talent in the world.
Now, Amanda, you started the season sort of a backup role, and then all of a sudden, Regina, midway through the season, and then all of a sudden now you take control in the last half of the season. So how was that transition for you in terms of, getting that starting role as a full-time quarterback and towards the end there?
Look, it was a bit of an adjustment, obviously, coming over. You always come over as the quarterback and you want to be QB1, obviously. That's everybody's goal, that when you come over, obviously, you want to compete for that starting role. Regina is a phenomenal athlete, and I'll say she's, one of the best, if not the best, athlete in the WNFC, and I will say that hands down. What I've seen her do at training and on the field is just absolutely phenomenal. But we're two completely different players, obviously, and two completely different quarterbacks, so we bring something completely different to the Mississippi Lady Panthers. And obviously the coaches were looking at different options throughout the season. You saw a little bit of, obviously Regina took the reins at the beginning and saw, like, you know, different spurts throughout the season. Regina did go down with a bit of an injury, which gave me an opportunity to really at the back end of the year to step up and really drive home the rest of the season.
Amanda, the Kansas City matchup, really kind of a game changer in terms of us looking at you guys from out here. It was basically one of those moments where that could have been the playoff moment for you guys. You beat Kansas City, more than likely you get into that ranking where you're in the playoffs. How did you see that Kansas City game in terms of changing maybe the trajectory to the playoffs?
Well, the expectation and certainly the roster for the Mississippi Lady Panthers, in my opinion, provided us with, as a minimum, a 5-1 season. So for us, the Kansas City game was something that we went into where we fully expected that we would not only compete, but we had the better, better athletes to certainly be able to compete and take us and get that win. Unfortunately, due to a number of, in-game decisions and adjustments and personnel and different opportunities, it didn't come up for us, unfortunately, this year. And certainly, I agree with you. I think that was the determining factor between us going to the playoffs and unfortunately ending up with a 3-3 season.
Towards the later half, I know what you're all made of. I know what you're capable of because we've witnessed you in Queensland for very many seasons, and we know what how tough you are. It was kind of interesting to see you break out into a more of a pocket quarterback, but your arm has always been beneficial in a lot of ways, where in Queensland we really saw you more muscle, in other words, between the tackles and get more roughed up. Now it just seems like you and Ida were having somewhat of a good connection in terms of passing back, staying in that pocket and really focusing on that throw, and you had some opportunities there where towards the end of the season, the connections were almost there. I mean, in terms of it was just kind of like you guys were in sync.
Absolutely. Ida is an absolutely incredible athlete. And she plays, obviously, both wide receiver and also defensive end. And she's somebody that she's one of the couple of girls that certainly I found that was very easy to throw. Number 15, Kymisha Andrews, was amazing as well. Had some, in the Atlanta Phoenix game, if you have a look at some of the throws that I threw to her. Also, obviously, Regina Jackson throwing to Regina is something as well. She can go up and get the ball. And I appreciate the kind words, Oscar, obviously, around what you've seen me do in Queensland versus obviously coming over here. I'm not going to lie, I probably was underestimated not only from some of the coaching staff, but also, on the field around what I could actually do both, as a running quarterback and obviously passing outside of the pocket. I always felt that some of my best plays are the ones that were breaking down because I had vision that could see outside of what obviously the play was intended to do. But in saying that, I came over to learn more about the game and to develop myself. And it was actually quite fun to have teach myself how to be in that pocket a little bit more and to be able to throw those balls. So for me, it was working on my passing game has been a lot of fun. Obviously, it helps develop another angle of my game and continue to develop. So I'm hoping that I can take that home and obviously hone in on that. But in saying that, my favorite game I think I played this season, and it was only probably one drive in particular, was the Atlanta Phoenix game. To me, that spread offense and that style of offense was certainly my bread and butter. And that drive in itself is probably one of my highlights of the season.
No, and we saw that in a lot of ways, how you developed and how you matured in that sense in terms of the pocket. At the beginning, there was, I think, one game where you guys were having some difficulties in terms of just the center exchanges, and they were just, on the line. You got to get used to that. But once you guys matured into the second game, you start to see it in the last two games where you were a little bit more comfortable. You were actually, eyeing everything, and you were able to, connect with certain targets and made more offensive efficiency. So that was a kind of refreshing to see. Not that you're, like I said, you can't escape and you're not able to run, but it just seems like when we had Regina in there, Regina basically was kind of targeted a lot, and we already know she can escape. It's just the fact that it was shut down. And with yourself, I think a lot of the teams kind of like didn't realize that you're able to stay in there and really deliver, right, the throws that you needed to deliver, because they were under the assumption that you guys were going to play the maybe the RPO mentality where you're just going to, you know, run the same way Regina was running. And then they kind of realized, I guess, in the last two games, I think a lot of teams realized that you were able to, you know, find that receiver without having to, you know, run out of the pocket.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, good on every team that played on us because they've done their homework. As we said earlier, Regina is an absolute athlete in itself. So she can rely on herself to get outside of that pocket and make plays. But in my opinion, obviously, I brought something completely different in that, and I could, like, you know, get out there and look at the way that a defense was standing a little bit different from my experience and knowing, obviously, different plays that were being called, that whilst I knew that when it got down to it, I could use my legs if I needed to, but I, like, you know, in my decision at the time was, let's spread the ball, let's start to make them question it. And then at times I would get the opportunity, for example, both in Atlanta, I think, and Philly, and also the last game in Houston where I was able to use my legs to score some touchdowns, which obviously created those lanes because we'd obviously opened up that field and started to get those passing from there. So for me, obviously, it was a bit of a different route concepts and certainly throwing, obviously, to new people, which, as you alluded to earlier, you could see, obviously, as the season went on, timing, more practice, those kind of things developed, which obviously made, like, you know, my connection coming in with each of them significantly better. You also obviously alluded to the offensive line. We had Haley and Liu that came in from Australia, so you brought two new girls to a five-man line. Everybody was still adjusting to what that team was, and that particular group in itself, where they started from game one to where they ended in game six, to me, they were just outstanding. I was proud to stand behind them. They gave me the time, and they also, like, you know, obviously helped me develop and allowed me to become that pocket passer that people saw.
Yeah, and I think your game evolving in that sense, I think, surprised a lot of people, like I said, because people, if they saw you from your Aussie game, they would assume that you're obviously going to be running it, right, a lot more. But they don't realize that, obviously, some of the Aussie games were 7-on-7, 9-on-9s, and this is more 11s. And I think that your transition, basically, into the 11s game this year is a lot more potent in terms of the WNFC, because in the East Coast, on that side of the coast, everybody is throwing, right? Everybody, you know, Langley's throwing. You got Billingsley's throwing out there in Alabama. You know, Bushman in Texas. So it's on the Atlantic side, everybody has a proficient quarterback to throw. So if you're not throwing and you're not, you know, generating offense and converting first downs, you're really going to be in a world of hurt, especially if you're going up when you're going up against Texas.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think diversity is a big thing on offense. I mean, if you can run the ball well, then obviously you can continue to do it. But the thing is if you have always run the ball well, then offenses are going to shut you down and find a way to be able to do that. For example, against Texas and certainly in the first half, our defense was absolutely amazing. They were a standout all season for us. And they shut down Texas's run game. So they had to go to the air significantly more. It was the same thing with us, is we are a run-heavy team, and you could see that from film. So people started to shut that down, and you could see that the gap opened up significantly when we went to the air. And as you said, obviously, as games developed, it became a lot easier because the timing routes, practicing, it just developed from there. And as you said, the Atlantic Conference is... I have watched the Pacific games, and don't get me wrong, I think every athlete in the WNFC and every team is fantastic. But definitely I think that the Atlantic is superior. Texas Elite certainly are a very well-disciplined team, but the one thing that I certainly took from playing them this year is that they're not as scary as I expected them to be. It was nice to be able to, at times, find gaps. Like, you know, I won't lie, it's pretty exciting to say that I threw the first touchdown on them in the regular season in 3 years. So that's pretty exciting to say against the best team or the three-time defending champions in the WNFC.
No, and Regina talked about it when we had her on here as well. To your point, it's if you consider them above you, then you've lost, right? If you consider them as equals, then you have a chance. So it's you have to go
Absolutely.
Into the game knowing that you have, you know, the same potential that they have and not give up. And you guys fought hard for the first half, and you guys kept it really close in the first half. So that was very impressive to see. And to your point, they are the benchmark. So if you can't get up for them, then obviously, you know, you're not going to be at that level. And when you have a defense on your side that held them down to a certain amount of points, which you guys did, and you guys were able to score on them as well. So that's very very nice for your program in terms of offense. And then between you and Regina that game, it just seems like, you know, they were expecting her to be the target, and then they kind of just you know your coaching staff threw a wrench in there when they put you in there like center, and they kind of realized, okay, this is a totally different ball game for us.
Absolutely, and I mean everybody. I mean, one of the reasons I came over to the U.S. to play is to play amongst the best in the world, and certainly obviously being the home of football here in America, obviously you know that you want to go toe-to-toe, so you don't want to come over and just play the teams for the sake of winning. You want to come, I mean, we all love to win, and don't get me wrong, obviously every game we go in to win, but you want to play the best. You want to make sure that your program is competing against the best, and also obviously putting the best product out there. And if you're being able to compete against somebody like Texas, and you're going to be taking the fight to them, and also thinking that you're, like, you know, in some ways have better game of proficiency, whether, as you said, obviously on defense or on offense, then certainly I think that you're winning from a program perspective. And I can't wait to see where the teams continue to push over the next couple of years, because everybody is pushing for that top spot now. We've seen over the last couple of years, obviously, San Diego came last year, obviously put up a good fight in the championship, the Nine Cup last year. Alabama-Texas game in the last couple of weeks, the 21-20, like, you know, they're pushing them. Again, obviously, our first half, it was 14-7. But like always, is offense needs to continue to put points on the board. To be able to ensure that you're not leaving defense hanging out to dry, whether it's throwing interceptions or three and outs, those kind of things. We need to make sure it's an equal and balanced game. And unfortunately, that didn't happen in the second half of that game. But certainly when you look at that first half, you know that we've got the roster, the talent, and certainly it's just fixing the small things to continue to be able to compete and, like, you know, hopefully in the future beat them to become, like, you know, competing with that top team and certainly playing in the Nine Cups.
And a lot of the teams have the same sentiment you have right now, is that the opportunity is there, and you have the opportunity, especially in the Atlantic. If you have Texas Elite more than once on your schedule, that is the benchmark, right? You go into the preseason, you go into the first game, you're rusty, but once you get into the real core of the season, if you're going up against them, it sort of tells you, you know, gauges you where you're at. Amanda, let's talk about next year. Are we venturing back to America to finish what we started, which is, you know, to take down the big beast in Texas? What's the thought process so far?
Look, I'm still here in the U.S. at the moment. I'm traveling. I'm lucky enough to have my husband here with me at the moment. He's come over to visit, so we're just enjoying the sights of obviously the U.S. And I'll head back to Mississippi next week to enjoy spending time with my teammates and the likes, and obviously be able to, like, you know, enjoy my last couple of weeks with them. So I think that decision I'm going to have to make when I get home. I'd love to come back over. I'd love nothing more than to be based out of the U.S. to continue to play football. I mean, it's an absolute dream. I love playing over here. As you alluded to earlier, obviously in Australia, we run different variations, whether it's 9-a-side. I have been lucky enough in Queensland to play 11-a-side. But to play against, as a quarterback, obviously, to continue to play against proper defenses that are running proper coverages, whether it's 2-3 mixed coverages, obviously full out blitzes, all of those kind of things. It's definitely something that, like, you know, I train my brain, my football IQ. The idea is to get better, and you only want to be, like, you know, continuing to play against the best. So It's definitely not out of the cards, but I also like my full-time job. Like all of us, we obviously still have to earn a full-time wage and work. So unfortunately, I need to work out what they will allow me to do in that sentiment to be able to come back. But it's definitely something I do want to do.
Yeah, and we look forward to, if the probability is there, to see you once again, and maybe the opportunity under center for Mississippi to finally take that over the hump deal, right, against the elite Spartans. So that's a future hope. So we'll hope that happens. Amanda, you were also chosen on the all-star capacity for the Mississippi Panthers alongside Haley, right? And it's I don't want to botch your name. Is it Luanga? Is that her? Can I pronounce that? Did I pronounce that correct?
I call her Liu because I also don't want to butcher her name. Okay, so yeah, Haley and Liu. Liu, yeah.
Yeah. Let's say Paulu and Tagaloa Smith. I'll go with that, so I don't have to.
Absolutely.
To mess it
unfortunately, they won't be protecting me. They're on Team Supreme for the All Pro. But no,
yeah,
it's very.
Well, you can't get everything, Amanda.
Obvious.
I'm sorry. You can't get everything.
I know. But no, it's been, like, I mean, obviously All-Pro was not something that I was expecting, certainly, obviously, only having played as many snaps as I did this year. So it was obviously very honouring to be able to get that call-up. And I'm really excited about that All-Pro weekend, not only to be able to obviously play with all of the other 100-plus girls that have been picked for All-Pro, but also to just see, like, you know, the level of football and talk to some of the other girls that are playing, what their programs are like and, like, you know, what they're doing, like, you know, outside of football season and just to, like, you know, talk football with more girls. Because I have to admit, that's probably been one of my favourite parts about coming over here to the US, has not only been the four other Aussie girls that I came over with Hayley Liu, but obviously Shiloh and Renee Hahn as well. It's certainly for me been, like, you know, extending my football family and being able to enjoy it. The girls from the Mississippi Lady Panthers were so amazingly welcoming to all of us. Southern hospitality is absolutely the realest thing I've ever seen. And just, like, you know, they're generally amazing humans. And then on top of that, they're even better footballers. So for me, I can't wait to expand that football family and enjoy not only playing one more game this season, because it's heartbreaking not playing in Jacksonville this weekend. So getting that opportunity is fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting weekend. I know last year's weekend was huge. Now it's a little bigger because you got, you know, Jerry Jones involved, Dallas and Frisco and some of the NFL capacity there. So it's really nice to, you know, get to be in that environment. And just the growth of the sport in the U.S., the excitement with the flag football and everything that's happening with in terms of girls tackle football in terms of the scope of the sport. It's also really nice. I wanted to bring you on because I know you're leaving soon, and I want to make sure that, you know, we get you on and give you some spotlight here, especially with the season that you had. And it was a really nice season with Mississippi. You know, you were obviously one of the premier global quarterbacks that we watch in terms of overseas as well. And it makes it kind of nice to get a perspective of what your journey was. Anything that you learned outside of football in Mississippi, and we're talking about, like, maybe food or, you know, I don't know, did you square dancing or were there something that was different?
Honestly, the U.S. is just completely different to Australia. I think that one of the biggest things for me was guns, gun laws here. And I know it's probably not a great topic to be talking about here at the moment in the US, but in Australia there is zero guns. So having been in obviously both Mississippi, having driven into Texas and seeing the open carry law, that's been very intimidating itself. Food has definitely been an interesting one. I'm not the best of people that will go out and try new things, but from what I've heard, Mississippi crawfish and the likes is fantastic. So it's definitely been an interesting journey, but I think for me, as I said, it's probably the culture of Southern hospitality. I think it reflects very much within the Australian culture. So if anybody wants to come to Australia, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, hit me up. I'm pretty sure that we can provide you with the same Southern hospitality, obviously, that comes with what you may get down in the South and in Mississippi. So.
No, it's interesting, the different dynamics in terms of the cuisine, in terms of the atmosphere, right, things like that. It's way different than when you come here from overseas, from a lot of people that tell me, you know, it's a different mindset as well. Accessibility of food also is kind of like a different type of mindset. And then obviously we have what they call an obesity epidemic. So there's always something at the grocery store that can throw you off your kilter in terms of your fitness regimen. And it's a very easy thing to do.
Organic Whole Foods has been my favorite place to shop, obviously.
I'm pretty
sure. It's the closest thing to what we had to a supermarket. And learn a lot about how your chicken is processed here as well, which is quite intimidating, obviously, in itself. But, no, I love the U.S. I love, like, you know, I'm just as excited as I am, obviously, to play football here. I'm a little bit upset that the NFL season doesn't carry in close, obviously, around. It would be great to stay here and obviously watch some great games and understand what Sunday football really is versus waking up at 4:30 on a Monday morning to watch football. So I'm, as I said, grateful for the opportunity to be over here and to be able to experience the culture, the food, and obviously above and beyond all of that, the people.
Yeah, it's a different mindset. The southern part of the country, as you can tell, very passionate football fanatics in terms of college. So it's a very hotbed for college football all the way around Georgia and all those places. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that. So you're hanging out, sightseeing with the hubby, and then you're going to get ready for what? For Texas, and then you're branching out at this point after the weekend, the Nine Cup weekend?
Yeah, pretty much. So I'm down here in Florida this week, just exploring. I've actually, football family is real everywhere. It's through my club at Griffith University when I was, a club administrator. I think it's very similar to what you would call as an ownership structure in Australia. Is one of the gentlemen that came across to play with us, we call them imports from America, is I'm actually staying with him this week in Orlando. Just to catch up with him, obviously, because we had him stay in our home for 6 months, so we thought we'd come back and obviously see him. I'm heading up to watch the playoffs in Jacksonville this week because there's going to be some pretty epic football matches there, obviously, in the WNFC versus the two playoff games on Thursday and then the Atlantic Conference there on Saturday. So looking forward to being able to see all of that and, be a part of more football over here.
All right, Amanda, I really appreciate you coming on, making the time. I know it's been a kind of a nice season for you guys as well. I wish you safe travels back after the All-Star event. Thank you for helping us out with our branding and bringing awareness to women's tackle football on the international scope. And are you guys going to have a Queensland season? Is this still a go for Queensland or not?
I'm not 100% sure at the moment. I know that at the moment they're recruiting quite hard, and obviously with the women's Outback the World Cup that's happening in July, that they have pushed back our start date of our season just a little bit to ensure that obviously the girls that are competing over there can come back and certainly get some reps in with their local team. So I'm fingers crossed that we are going to have a season. It was heartbreaking, obviously, last year not to get up a women's division to compete. So fingers crossed that we will get it. So if there's anybody listening here in the US or even globally that's looking to play, let me know. We could always take some more numbers, obviously, in Australia to help boost our numbers. I'm hoping that we will get something up and running this year. Unfortunately, because I've been over here in the US, I did step away from Griffith University Thunder in the GQ season. So I haven't had my finger on the pulse like I usually have throughout the year. So I'll probably wait until I get back after the All-Pro, so I fly out that week and probably head down to a training session and just see how the numbers going and fingers crossed that we can get that across the line.
All right, Amanda, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for the time. It's an honor to speak to you as well as one of the pioneers in Gridiron Australia. Looking forward to the Outback team and see how they fare this time on the international stage in Finland. So I hope you're excited. The roster looks like it's a little different roster than it was in the first time go-around, but there's a lot more interest in terms of some of the big talent over in WA, majority of it's on the roster now with that. And then you got Queensland, New South Wales. So a lot of the, you know, in terms of the different aspects of you know, leagues in Australia, really up for this time to get to the Outback roster. I think that's going to make it more more efficient this time around, a lot more better. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the Outback team competes on the international stage in terms of in Finland at this time. So interesting to see, you know, how that whole roster will click, and looking forward to seeing how it will evolve and where they finish.
Absolutely, and I mean, for me, I'm excited to see a lot of the new faces. I mean, Gridiron in Australia is riding definitely a wave at the moment of ups and downs, depending on where you are across the nation. It's so amazing to see WA, where they started a few years ago, and certainly the development, both obviously the number of teams that they've got, as well as the absolute athleticism and talent. I've been lucky enough through my work to travel over to WA and train with one or two of the teams. And, like, you know, their passion is just like any of ours over on the East Coast. So I think that you'll see a lot more the names and the girls, not only from an Outback, but hopefully you'll start to see a few of them look to come over and travel to the US and certainly compete at this level as well. I think that there's, in Australia in general, there is an immense amount of talent down there, and certainly I know personally my views from having played over here in the US this year is we can compete against any of the teams and certainly make an impact, both obviously from a football IQ and then also on the field perspective. So I definitely am very excited to watch. Don't get me wrong, I'm probably going to get FOMO for watching the girls in Finland, but I can't wait to see how they develop as a team. I'm very excited. I kind of know a bit of the offense and the life that they'll be running, so I'm very excited to see how they execute and like, you know, the next level that they take it to this year.
Yeah, really interesting to see how Outback women's team does on the IFAB level. Thank you again, Amanda. Enjoy your stay in Florida. Looking forward to your all-star performance in the Nine Cup playoffs weekend, and safe travels back home.
Thank you so much, Oscar. And as I probably exactly what Adrienne said in the previous one is, I know I've certainly learned a lot of football around the world, certainly women's football, through what you have done in itself. So I appreciate what you do. I appreciate being able to be a supporter of the No Joke Football brand. And more than anything, you giving us a platform to be able to, like, you know, have this conversation tonight and certainly continue to build that. So thank you for all that you do for us.
I appreciate that. Kind words. I appreciate it. Like I said, safe travels. Looking forward to your performance at the All-Star Game. And then hopefully we'll see you back in the WNFC in about a year from now. So looking forward to see if that news will come about. But thanks again. Appreciate it.
No worries. Have a great night, Oscar.
All right, guys. Amanda Housen, one of the pioneers of Gridiron Australia football, quarterback of the Griffith Thunder champions in Queensland as well, and the quarterback of the Mississippi Lady Panthers. So really awesome player. What an amazing story there, and almost evolving. I think if she would have started the season, we probably would have seen Mississippi maybe in the playoffs, but, you know, it just didn't turn out to be this way. And we're hoping that she will make a return to the States and, you know, and see her once again in the WNFC one more time. All right, let's bring in the Oracle of women's tackle football, and that would be Mark Simone, a.k.a. the backseat coach, into the fold of things here. Mark, we just talked to Adrienne Smith, which you know very well, and we talked to Amanda Housen here, and so both athletes, one international superstar, the other one world superstar in a lot of ways. So just an awesome hour.
Yeah, yet they are both pioneers of the game in, you know, in different ways, but they're certainly they're adding to the game, right? They're making the world of women's tackle football, you know, smaller so that more people across the world, around the world, can get involved in it. And so that's really great. I certainly hope that we do see Amanda Housen come back. I kind of feel like we will. It seems to me like most international players who come to the United States and get that taste of competing over here really have a hard time not coming back. So hopefully we'll see her again, and we'll see her in the WNFC next year, we hope.
Mark, you know, she started to click. If they would have won that KC game, I think it would have been a different story, right? They started to click. They played a very, to her point, like she said, they played two quarters of really good football against Texas. So, I mean, she got a taste about how to beat the big team. So maybe she comes back.
Yeah, you know, it'll be hard to turn around and walk away knowing that. And it was so hard this season, you know. It's another shortened season. Only six games, you know. When you don't get into the playoffs like that, you know, you must wonder a little bit, like, well, you know, what if we just had like a couple more games under the belt, you know. So, you know, maybe next year she'll be able to get a few answers on those questions.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to see if she'll return. And we had some sad news, Mark. We had the sudden passing of Philadelphia Phantoms standout, Zaire Foreman, number 8. That was the news that was announced this past couple of days. So a very talented young athlete in her 20s. We didn't get feedback on what happened, but, you know, condolences to her family and the Philly Phantoms. We also had another incident that happened. Denise Duran, a running back for the Thunder Girls of the WFL, also passed away, and we don't have the details yet, but our condolences to the Thunder Girls and to the Philly Phantoms for their teammates on their passing.
Yes, I echo every sentiment that you've made. Condolences to the families and the teams. It's been a pretty rough week, and I think we've had more than our fair share of sad news like this year. You know, everybody just, you know, cherish everybody that's in your life, everybody who
yep.
makes it better while you have them.
Yeah, you gotta cherish the moment, to your point, exactly, because things happen and things just change out. But you know, Philly Phantoms and Thunder Girls are like I said, our condolences to you, to teammates and to the family, to the squad, on the passing of Denise Duran and Zaire Foreman in that light. Mark, the matchups are set. We talked about D1, the pro division. I think the keys to Boston against DC will be their consistent backfield play. You know, I think they have what it takes to do this. What will DC need to do, Mark, to upset your Renegades?
DC is going to have to score early. It's one of the things that they'll need to do, because it you know, if they fall behind by a couple of scores, it just makes it so much harder, because Boston is so hard to stop. So, you know, if DC can even, like, get on the scoreboard first, that will help their cause. And they got to find a way to, you know, stop the run. If they can't stop the run, it's just gonna, you know, it's gonna be a long night. If they can somehow, you know, stretch out that field, keep Mata from, you know, getting to the next level, stopping Kusinen, you know, which, you know, we're talking about pretty hard tasks, of course, but, you know, limiting Kusinen's forward progress, and get Boston into third and long, you know, that'll increase their chances as well. Of course, we know Boston they will just find a different way to kill you, right? They're just killers. So even on the third and long, you know, you have to contend with, you know, a slew of different receivers who can get you, and Cahill, who can deliver the ball. and not to mention a coaching staff who could catch you off guard and do something unexpected on you. So it's definitely a tall order for the DCs to come out on top against Boston, but certainly they have to get their offense going right away because, you know, if they can't be, you know, putting up points on the board, they just don't have a chance.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, looking at stats this week, their only impactful player or a couple of their impactful players, one of them is their international import, Olavu, anesthesia, Anna. And then you also have Geneva Davis and Johnson, Bucheria Johnson. So I think those are the three players that must make an impact to try to stop the Renegades offense on the air attack. On the bottom of, you know, in terms of the run game, to your point, that's a more difficult task. So if you'd have to force Cahill to throw on almost every down for them to even get an opportunity for like an INT and a game changer. And given the fact that they don't do that often, except for the red zone, it's going to be a very hard task for DC to win this.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that running game will it's punishing. Tires out your defense. It's that so self-fulfilling prophecy. If you can't stop it in the beginning, it only gets harder to stop as the game progresses.
No, and that's the key. Can they do that? And it's kind of blank in this way, but, you know, if you're listening to us, Divas, there is an opportunity for an upset, but you got to play your best four quarters of the whole season in order for you to have that, you know, that chance to win. And that's a tall task to ask.
Oh, definitely. But you know what? You know, they got in the playoffs. And so, you know, everybody's record is 0-0 right now. And, you know, this is what you play for. This is the kind of game that you know, you play for. So everybody's taking this game seriously. I don't think there's anybody who thinks that the outcome is already determined. So we're definitely going to see players fighting hard come this weekend.
Yeah. On the Arlington side against Cali, we talked about last week about who we will see. We will see Wiggins, which makes a big difference under center. And if we do not see Wiggins, then Arlington, which is Ricks, Thomas, they're able to take the game over here. They're a good lethal combination. And add Ken Gabriel on there, add Korea Williams. So they are loaded in terms of an offensive potency. And once they get going, as Coach Brian Williams of Houston says, once they get momentum, it's very hard to stop them. So which version of the Cali War is the better question are we going to see?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we have a pretty good handle on, you know, who the impact are. You know, they're second in rushing yards per game. We know that they can roll up those rushing yards pretty quickly. We know that they're very tough. And we've seen some of what the Cali War can do when they have a passer who's on top of their game. They've got very, very dynamic wideouts that can make big long plays. They get, you know, I think their receptions are average or some of the longest here in the league. You know, we've got Nenacha Cloud, 28, you know, almost 30 yards per catch. All right. I mean, that's big. Brianna Barrett, you know, 21 yards per catch. And those are among some of the top players in WFA Pro. And they're both top five total yards receiving this year. So we know that they can get loose, they can make catches, and they can run after the catch. It's, as you said, the question is, Who's going to be throwing the ball to them? You know, is it going to be Chantel? Clearly, I think she's the quarterback that best puts Callie Warren in position to
Mark, I know Salerno is no longer there, and Salerno was somewhat impactful in that first game, a couple games, and now my news telling me that she's no longer there. So it only leaves Chantel or Jamie Robinson. If you're going to start Jamie Robinson against Arlington, if you're Callie War and you're Coach King here, I don't think that's going to be a great thing to work with. But you know what? You have Barrett. Barrett's probably the most productive player on their team in terms of a dual threat. And you got Washington. So if Wiggins plays, to your point, there's some versatility for them to use against Arlington. You also have Cloud as well. But it's Washington,
yep.
Barrett, and Cloud if Wiggins plays. If Wiggins doesn't play, wow, that's going to be big news for this matchup.
Yeah, it'd be hard to know really what the offense looks like if Wiggins doesn't play. You know, are they going to stick with the same game plan? Are they going to try and pass the ball downfield in the same manner they would with Wiggins in there? You know, are they going to do something different? You know, they have athletes. Can they use them right way in the right situations? That's the question. You know, consistency with the war has been the big question, like over this season and the season past. So
yeah,
it's hard to make a prediction on this without really knowing who's under center. It's a real big deal.
Yeah, I'm edging Arlington if Wiggins doesn't play. I will give Arlington the edge if Wiggins doesn't play because they got more potential. Boston, I'm penciling them in. I'm sorry, DC, but I'm penciling Boston in at this point. Mark, Minnesota, Nevada, big rematch here. This is for the next step to the road to Canton. Coach Chris Garza knows this. The Minnesota coaching staff knows this. I think this is the game, not to omit the other two games that we just talked about, but I think this is the game that we're going to be watching.
Right. I mean, I really love this. This is the number one and number four team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't, you know, it's too close to call, basically. I mean, can you want anything more from, like, the one and four bracket? That's awesome. Love it. I absolutely love it.
Now,
I really have no idea who's going to walk away with it.
If Cooper doesn't play, that's a big, big weapon. And, you know, Nevada was able to stop, you know, Nevada was able to come back from 20-something points down. Okay? So if you're Nevada, Mark, you're coming into this game, you know you cannot go down 20 points. That's a, like, once-in-a-lifetime comeback. So it's a big hurdle for them, too.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about that game, you know, a number of things happened. You know, Grace Cooper came out of the game with an injury, and she didn't play. But, you know, Cooper's not the one who played offense. Cooper isn't the one who let that comeback happen, right? That was Minnesota's defense. So question is, you know, has Minnesota gotten that straightened out for this rematch, right? Are they going to be – they have to be stout. Now, obviously, they know who Nevada is and what's coming, and they remember what happened, and they're not happy about it, and they want to get revenge. And I think this is a good – I think this is kind of a good situation for Minnesota to – in a way, kind of be a little bit of an underdog, right? Because they took that loss earlier in the season. But Minnesota's at home. They're going to be in their comfort zone here in the playoffs. And I'm going to give Minnesota a slight edge.
Yeah, no, slight edge is correct. I think if you're Nevada, and we know what Coach Garza is going to do here, I think if you're Nevada – they had really good success with running the game on the sweeps.
Mm-hmm.
Really good success with Marcucci down the middle. They were attacking the Minnesota defense late down. So if you're in Nevada, Felker and Marcucci on offense might be your weapons. On defense, they all play pretty hard defense. So if you're Nevada, you've got to be able to stop everybody else that isn't Cooper. If you stop everybody else that isn't Cooper like they did in the second half, then you got a chance. So that's opportunities right there.
Absolutely. And I think another big key, I think, for Nevada is, keeping the players on the field. As you mentioned, they got a number of players playing both ways. And I know Minnesota does as well this year. But I think for Nevada, it's their key players are very key. If any of them were to go out, that would hurt Nevada, I think, a lot more than Minnesota, perhaps. So Nevada's two-way players have to stay on the field, I think, to get the job done.
Now, if you're Minnesota, Mark, you're going to be relying, if you have no Cooper, you got to rely on Haas. You're going to have to rely on Washington Ware and on Barber. So coming into this matchup, even Radford. So there's three other players that are going to have to step up if Grace Cooper doesn't, play. And so they have the weapons on offense. It's going to be how well will Nevada defense do against Aaron Kelly, and how well would Aaron Kelly go against Nevada defense. So it's really, like to your point, it is a Nevada home game. I mean, Minnesota home game. And this is a big game for them. If they lose at home to Nevada, that's going to be a very heartbreaker.
Yeah, that will make for a very disappointing ending of the season for Minnesota. Obviously they were in the national championship game last year at the pro level, and they want to get back. They played a competitive game. They got to see the Renegades up close. They're kind of expecting the Renegades to be there this year. They want to have another crack at it. So it would certainly be a very disappointing loss for them this weekend if they cannot get past Nevada. And to your point, they have the weapons. Radford has been the best receiver in the pro division this year. If she gets hot, then, I think the Vixen have a very good chance of winning.
Yeah, so, it's a good matchup. I think that's the one we're going to be watching. I don't know if that's going to be the for the fans playoff scenario. Pittsburgh comes in here with nothing to lose, Mark. George has had a great season as a rookie. You had a good solid running game, good showing against Boston as well. Tough battles there. Is this Kim Shaw's, moment, Candy Thompson's moment? They got to get over the hump here. They really have. This is a win for. They got to get this win, because if they don't get this win, we're gonna equate it to their soft schedule and not enough durability for them to to get over it.
Right. Even though as you point out, their schedule has not been the most competitive. And that's typically kind of been the story for Tampa, just because of where they are geographically. That being said, I feel like this is probably the best team they've had in a very long time. I think they were better than last year. And, they have a playoff game that they can win here against a team that's pretty good, Pittsburgh. So I expect that this will be a close game. I give the edge to Pittsburgh, part of that is just reputation of the overall, organization. But I really don't want to take anything away from Tampa Bay, because they're building an organization that's a winner. They have got good athletes, obviously have a lot of experience on their team right now. And I think they haven't had any better shot of a winner than this team right here. To be honest with you, I think this is the best team that they've had in a long time.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying it's a key for them to really step up their game, because if they lose here, Mark, we're going to be talking about that week's schedule and how they didn't really fare well against DC. You know what I mean? And that's a pro team as well.
Right.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Where the Pittsburgh Passion, you know, George, Chavez, Fatali, Ariel Smith, you got Jaina Meister, which they got to contend with, Ellison Malarski as well. So there's a couple weapons on offense that George has been able to utilize, and this is one of the issues that I think the Inferno's going to have. So if they can do that and take care of it, they got a shot, but it looks like I'm going with Pittsburgh, unfortunately.
Right. I think the question, the question for me is, how big of a role is George going to have in the game? Not given to her by her coaches, but what can Tampa Bay do to put all the pressure on George, and how will she respond? If Tampa Bay, I mean, we know that Tampa Bay has a very good run defense, and if they can stop the run, if they can stop Fatali and, some of the jet sweeps that that Chavez run, if they can stop those and consistently put George in a position where she has to make a pass to get a long first down, that's what seems like to be a good scenario for Tampa Bay. Can they execute a defensive game plan that will make that happen? That, for me, that's the big question. And on the side of Pittsburgh, how does Alyssa George respond to that pressure being a rookie quarterback in her first playoff game?
Exactly the big question there. Mark, let's go WNFC Atlantic breakdown. We got 15 minutes. The Elite Spartans here coming into this game probably as the favorite, and they're taking on, I believe, Kansas City, if I'm correct, in the Atlantic Conference. If you're Lauren Crouch, Kiki, the coach out there, what do you do different? Or do you do anything different at this point?
Well, I think, defensively, they saw some success against the Spartans, and so they want to accentuate whatever they've determined worked in that game, and then come up with something for the second half that will allow them to continue to do that. Offensively, I don't know how they're going to figure this out. I think I said last week that, somebody on the Glory offense really has to step up and take control and just try and take over that game offensively. They need to keep that ball away from the Spartans. So, I don't know who's going to spearhead that, but they need to find a way to get it done. They need to find a way to advance the ball and chew up clock so that they can keep the ball out of the Spartans' hands and put up some points on the board.
Obviously,
it's all order.
It has to – right at this, as we speak right now, I'm agreeing with you. This game, if they have a shot, has to be one on defense, and that's going to be up to Snowden, Lee, Capelu, Rosa, Childress, Shields. They're going to have to play their best game of their life against OG and company and against Landry. And I'm not laughing because it's funny. It's just, Bushman and company, once they get going, and Hyman, they got the receivers, right? It doesn't look pretty. Every third quarter that we've seen so far seems like the Bear awakens after halftime. So, we saw Mississippi
right.
go for two quarters, Washington two quarters. I'm just saying it doesn't look pretty. And can they do it is the question. And if the Glory have a shot, the offense has to play literally perfect ball, and the defense has to play lights out ball.
That's right. I mean, basically both squads have to do their part to try and keep the Elite off the board, right?
Yep.
I mean, the Glory's not going to somehow come out and win this game like by by two or three touchdowns, right? I mean, if the Glory going to win, it's going to be like a 1-point game or something like that, right? Or maybe, you know, at most like one score. You know, that's just how I see it happening. So it's got to be a ball control game for the Glory.
Mark,
and
Mark,
if it isn't,
is it sad that we're not even talking Elite Spartans here? We're not even talking Elite Spartans here. We're literally game planning with the Glory. Is that what we're doing?
we're
literally gambling.
I mean, all we've got to say is that, you know, the key to the Spartans game is to just do what they do. And if they do what they normally do, they're going to win. And if they don't, well, maybe they'll lose, but maybe they'll still win. Right? It's like the game plan is just do what they do.
If you take the Alabama game plan, Mark, you have a shot. If you don't do the punt, you know, the field goal, you take the Alabama game plan. If you're Kansas City, maybe you have a shot. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so, I mean that's pretty much it. You know, kind of a low scoring game. You know, they stopped the Spartans from having an explosive offensive display. And that's the number one thing that you got to do if you're going to have a chance. So you're absolutely right. I mean, that's kind of basically the game plan.
Yeah, take that game plan and try to execute it as best as you can and limit the offense's production, and you have a shot. So, Mark, this game right here is a hatred game. This is a rivalry game. This is the same thing we said about Denver and Vegas last week. Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama, it would be. I mean, if you're Alabama, you want nothing better to bounce Atlanta out of the playoffs. Literally nothing. And then, if you're Alabama, Mark, do you not want to go up against the Spartans in one game to the Nine Cup final? This is. I think this is the wish.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at all these matchups, I get the feeling like this is going to be a slugfest, right? You say, these are two teams that know each other really well. They want to destroy each other. So this makes for a really, really great quarterfinal matchup.
We talked about wanting to watch Minnesota, Nevada. This is the game. This weekend, not to disrespect everybody else, but I think this is the game, right? 7-0 week one, right? Alabama loses by 7. 29-0 the third matchup of their game. So I think they understand that 29-0 blowout's not going to happen again. And then Alabama coming off that 21-20 loss to the Spartans. I think if you're Alabama, and they have their defensive guru now back in form, which is K. Mitchell back in form running that defense. Do you not think K understands how, you know, this is so important? I think she does. And I think this Alabama team, you know, this Alabama team is really going to have to, you know, play as good as they played against the Spartans, and I think they get the W. Can you stop Renee Langless? Walker and Brittany Smith and Malise Brown, Brandy Pringle. I mean, they have the second half, Mark. This team has really started to come together in terms of the Phoenix. So it's Alabama. I think, if you're Alabama, this is a different team than what you saw in the two matchups. So interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, Oscar. I mean, actually, these are both different teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it like even more interesting and a little bit unpredictable. My gut tells me that, you know, the teams are probably closer than, you know, what we saw in their previous matchup. And so, you know, it might be a game that's, finishes with, one score, maybe 10, 12 points, something like that. So, expecting I'm expecting kind of a low-scoring game. How do you feel about that? Do you agree?
I think, given what I see right now, I'm disagreeing because Alabama goes from a 29-0 whipping, right? Then they go up against Texas, and they get edged by one on that mistake, right? And then they turn around and completely, I guess they were pissed off that they lost to the Spartans, and they just routed Florida 70-7, okay? And they've had, what, a week and a half of game planning? I think Billingsley and Smith and Woodward, those are the three names that you got to watch out for. If they play their game like they know they can, I think Atlanta's in for a surprise.
Okay, this makes it real juicy.
Yeah,
so
I'm
pretty stoked. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Kelly Smith,
but
I mean, 9 touchdowns on rushing, 5 touchdowns on in terms of Mary Woodward, 5 touchdowns on receiving, and they've played their last 3 matchups, Mark, so aggressively in terms of like just good football. I know it's Florida, the Avengers, right? You put 70. But they did almost beat the Spartans, so maybe they're just a little enthusiastic about this. But, if you're Alabama, this is your shot, right? You want to go face the Spartans once more to prove that you can beat them. You have to get through Atlanta.
Yep, yep. The team that, handed them 2 goose eggs in the regular season. So it's definitely storybook stuff. It's really awesome. I just have a hard time thinking that the Phoenix, with the way their defense has just dominated all season long,
yep.
Right, you're going to give up more, more than, say, like 14 points, But we'll see. I this is going to end up being like a 21-14 type of game, 17-14, something like that.
I'm gonna take. I would say if the Phoenix play their game and they slow down the clock and they compress it down like they've done in the first 2 matchups, they win. If the defense, if the Alabama offense gets going, first 2 quarters will tell us exactly how this game's going to turn out. But given the history, you would have to go with the Phoenix, right? Because they've owned them. So. I mean, it's Alabama's moment to shock us, basically.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of, Phoenix's game to lose, their game to lose. They've done everything right so far this season. And if things go wrong here, really disappointing ending.
Well, Mark, I'm sorry, but I already got my popcorn, Slurpee, and everything ready for this weekend. And it's 3 days
right.
Before this weekend.
Right. We don't even have to wait till the weekend, We got Thursday.
It's funny, but I don't know, but this is a great football. And then I'm sorry everybody, we didn't talk about Sweden, Finland. I did tease that, but we ran out of time. So you can go to the hub, get your fix right there at the hub, get all the lowdown and everything that's happening at the hub. So, but Mark, awesome. We got to be out of here. We got a minute to get out of here. Thanks for coming in. Looking forward to this weekend, Mark. WFA, pro clashes. I'm looking forward to Minnesota, Nevada, and definitely looking forward to Atlanta, Alabama.
Me too. Enjoy yourself, Oscar.
Thanks, Mark, for coming in. Okay, guys, for the absent Holly Custis, who's playing this weekend, Mac, playing this weekend, Lister, playing this weekend, go get the W, people. Go get the W. Have a great night, everybody.
Is the fastest-growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy-to-play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.